my gosh, you know, is this really real, you know? And so I got to see the other side of it, of actually, I guess I would call it, you know, goodly people that were truly interested in getting some insurance. And, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of companies, 9 different companies that you can help someone with, you know, depending on their health. So there's really, you know, I felt like there's no one that I couldn't really help if they want it.
Plan to fail so you won't. Production will solve all your problems. Some will, some won't. Stop whining, so what? Just hit your weekly production goal. The weekend starts now. Our podcast this week is with Joyce Emig. Joyce lives in Trenton, Illinois, has 3 children, Kayla, Kim, Lance, and a beautiful grandson, Dawson. She got into the insurance business in 2012 and started with Senior Insurance Solutions in November of 2013. Joyce has been one of the top producers every year she's been with us. She tied right into the training system and now enjoys the ability to work as much or as little as her lifestyle allows. This business has given her the opportunity to have more free time to be able to spend it with family and, most important, with her grandson. Welcome, Joyce Emig.
All right, here we go. Thanks for being on here with us. Let's start out with something that isn't too consequential, but what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a bowl of cereal.
What kind of cereal?
It was berries and flakes.
Awesome. Any coffee, anything like that?
Nope, just the milk with it.
You mean you didn't pour coffee on your cereal?
No.
All right. So let's say you're at a cocktail party nowadays and somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, Joyce, how's it going? Haven't seen you in a while." What do you do nowadays anyway? How do you answer that?
I say I sell fine with this life insurance.
And that's it, huh?
Yep.
Okay. So tell us the story. How did you get into this?
Long story. I was working for a company for 32 years called Jim Farmore, and they sent me out to one of our locations out in California, like the California, and I was staying at a hotel and ran into or met a guy at the bar, didn't think much of it, and we kind of hit it off, and so we started dating long distance for about a year, and then I decided that I wanted to move out to California, and so I made the move out there. My kids were not very happy with me, but needless to say, between that and my house not selling, didn't really find a job out there, so I decided to move back after a year and a half. Since my house didn't sell, I moved back into my house and didn't know really what I was going to do. So I just knew that I really didn't want to go back to where I was, just for the simple fact I didn't want to have to start over and work under someone that worked under me, because I was in management when I was there. So I just put my resume online, and with that got called pretty quickly with a company called Bankers Life Insurance. And so I went to the interview, and there was like 15 people there. So I thought, oh, gosh, there's no way I'm ever going to get this. But like the whole idea of the structure of it, the commissions you could make, and so I got my license and started selling with Bankers Life Insurance in July of 2013. And by the end of September, I guess, October, beginning of October, I had several policies that had fallen off, and so I had chargebacks, and so I was having to pay them back, not making any money, going, how am I going to do this? So I was going to really get out of the business. In my mind, I was going to have to look for something different because it wasn't working. And Jackie Peters' name got brought up two times in one day, which was kind of odd, saying that she sells life insurance. So I contacted Jackie because Jackie had been a friend of mine. And so I still liked it. I just wanted to make money and not have to lose money. So got with Ken and Jackie and got contracted with the group that with Jim Wall's group. And so with the help of Jim and Ken and Jackie, I have been selling life insurance for the past 3 years, going into my fourth year, and love helping people and doing this. So that's how I got into this.
Awesome. Going back to California, did you leave your job, or did you do the same thing with Jim's Formalware out there, or did you have a job out in California?
No, I did not work for the company because the company's location out in California was in Visalia, California, and the gentleman that I had met lived in Sacramento, which was like 5 hours from there, so there was no way that I could commute there. And so was just, you know, thinking there was a lot more opportunity out there to find a job, but it was a lot harder than what I had anticipated. And so it was just kind of doing odds and ends, little things, nothing significant. And like I said, I didn't make enough money to be able to handle all of that from there and still be in Illinois, you know, stay in Illinois. So that's why I moved back.
So you gave up a job after like 30-some years to chase some guy out to California? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
Well, yeah.
And you're not 18. I know that. You're not 18 to 20 years of age. So, you know, talk about how your family, you said they were a little frustrated with you about that. Talk about how your family, I mean, I guess I always think of, you know, what would, if your daughter came to you and said, hey, Mom, I'm going to quit my job and move to California because some guy, you know, shook my hand at a bar. How would you respond to that?
Well, it technically wasn't that, but I, you know, like I said, we dated long distance for a year. I went out to California. He came out to Illinois, met my kids, my dad, and I went out to California. So we did it, you know, back and forth probably 6 times, and so got to thinking, you know, we knew each other pretty well. We had a great connection and just felt like he was the guy for me at the time. And, you know, thinking California, you know, I love the sun. I love the, you know, I hate the snow. I hate living in Illinois because of that. And I guess in my mind, I felt like my children would have been excited for, because they're all grown and out on their own anyway. And I lived in the same town that they did, and it's not like they came to see me every day, every week. You know, I didn't see them a lot, you know. And so I was just thinking that, you know, they would be excited to, you know, for me to move out there to have a place to vacation. And as far as the job, I really, you know, had anticipated selling my house so I wouldn't have, you know, the debt that I had to maintain that, you know, pay that off, and then I could find the time to actually, you know, find a good job. And, you know, God had other plans for me, I guess. It just, none of it worked out. And really, it was very hard because I have 3 children. I have 2 daughters, and then my son's the baby. My middle daughter, who was with a boyfriend living with him at the time, and she was more understanding about it because she had someone else. My daughter, my son, oldest daughter, and my son did not. So they just felt like, you know, I guess I was abandoning them, even though they were in their 20s. But they didn't accept it as well. And so on Mother's Day in 2013, I was talking to them, and it was, you know, it's very short answers and very, you know, get off the phone kind of thing. It, you know, they just were hurt. And so it, in that turn, it hurt me. And so I literally sat outside and cried for a couple hours and went in and told Russ, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. So we made, I mean, he was very supportive. We're still friends. So, you know, it's not like it was, you know, horrible, but it was an experience of thing I thought I wanted to do, and it just didn't work out.
So going back to Banker's Life, what did the conversation look like? I guess let's start out more. What did the kind of first call just to get you in to do an interview there, what did that sound like, and how did they kind of bait you in to come in to talk to them at least?
Well, they just said that they were offering me an interview and, you know, just said that set up a time. And I was just super excited because I don't have a college degree and didn't know what I was going to do, and thinking, you know, it would be awesome, not really, you know, knowing what it was all about. But when I got there, and like I said, I saw 15 people, I thought, you know, I've never done insurance before. There's no way I'm going to get this. And unfortunately, with Banker's Life, what I found was it's like a revolving door pretty much when I worked there. It was like pretty much if you wanted the job, you had it. And, you know, because of the, you know, I guess chargebacks and things, their leads were not very good, which was very hard to try to set appointments. It was, they were giving you old leads that people that they mailed a lead to, but that person didn't even mail the lead back, so they weren't really interested in the beginning. So, but though they still gave you those numbers to try to contact, and there were 2 days out of the week that we had to make phone calls to try to set appointments, and we had to actually go into an office for 8 hours. And, you know, there were some, you know, it was just, it was a long, frustrating day. But initially in the interview, you know, the manager of that location, you know, they show you all the good stuff, you know, the commissions, this is what you can make. They don't tell you, you know, they say they offer you leads, you know, so you're thinking, well, gosh, that should be pretty good, you know, but they don't tell you about the chargebacks. They don't tell you that the leads are really crappy leads, and so it was a lot harder once I got going with it than what I initially thought.
And what about training? Did they have any scripts or phone scripts or, you know, here's what you say when the client says this, or was there any of that, or did they just throw you to the wolves?
No, they did have that. I had to go up to Chicago to get my license to do their training, and then had to take the test in St. Louis. But there was really a lot of training. There was a lot of computer, computer programs that you had, the videos you watched and questions you had to answer, and you had to do so much every week, because I felt like once I got done working, I sat at home for hours watching videos, answering questions. And the, you know, I guess the bad part for me of those was it was good training, but a lot of it was so scripted that, you know, it was like, you know, they were going to make the sale, even though that's truly not what happens in real life. And so that was really hard because, you know, it was, yeah, they gave you training and they gave you a script to read, but it was all like, you know, roses that, you know, it was going to happen when it really did.
So tell me about that first conversation with Jackie, because you had a unique perspective. Most of our agents, you know, come into this blindly. They haven't ever even seen a final expense application, much less talk to the people or anything. And you had that experience and you knew what chargebacks were and you knew that there was a difference between good leads and bad leads and stuff. So how did that first conversation with Jackie go?
Actually, it was really super amazing because I didn't, you know, yes, I knew what to expect, but I didn't. And so because, like I said, Jackie and I were friends, she worked out of her office. Her office was in her home. So when we made contact that I was going to possibly do this, she said, come on over on a Sunday night. I'll cook dinner and we'll have a glass of wine, you know. So that I'll make my calls. You can listen to it. So I thought, okay, you know, so she had her stack of leads, and she made, you know, the, she called through them, and it was like she had, I don't know, 10, 12 leads, and she set, like, 8 appointments. And in my mind, I'm going back to bankers. I mean, like I said, we would sit there for 8 hours, and if I got 1, maybe 2 appointments, I was feeling lucky, you know. And so she set the appointments, and so then I said to her, my exact words was, okay, Jackie, that was awesome, you know, but I said, can I, you know, because I said I don't want to jump out of my sinking ship into your sinking ship, and so, you know, I would like to, you know, go with, ride with you to see how your actual appointment goes. And she was like, sure, no problem. So I just told the manager that I was sick because I did have to report to someone with bankers. And so I rode with Jackie that day, and she sold on every appointment. And she had made like $6,000 in one day. She was on 100% commission. I'm going, oh, my gosh, you know, is this really real, you know? And so I got to see the other side of it of actually, I guess I would call it, you know, good leads, people that were truly interested in getting some insurance. And, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of companies, 9 different companies that you can help someone with, you know, depending on their health. So there's really, you know, I felt like there's no one that I couldn't really help if they want it.
So at what point did you look at this business and say, this is it? This is something that I can really see myself doing for a long time, or even for, you know, the rest of my life?
Well, really that day riding with Jackie, because I'm like, you know, and I've had some ups and downs, some tough days, some tough weeks. And, you know, there, I was, even after, you know, riding with Jackie and made the decision, Ken got me contracted with all the companies. I was ready to go, and I was on my own doing this. And, you know, I guess for me, I struggle the most when I feel like I have to make that sale. I have to make money, because then in my mind, in the back of my mind, that's always there. And I was struggling one week, and I you know, no shows, people telling me no, and I called Jackie, and we were talking, and she said, you know, Joyce, you know, that happens to me too. She said, you just have to create the need. And that, for that moment, that kind of stuck in my head. It's like, well, duh, you know, you have to create the need, because these people need this. You just have to help them, you know, figure out how they can make that work. And it doesn't always work, but for the most part, you know, that has helped me immensely. And I guess from that point on, it, you know, it became like, yes, this is what I want to do, what I can do.
Well, Joyce, we need to put things in perspective for our listeners, because not everybody that's going to listen to this will know who Joyce Emig is. But I want them to understand that you said you're starting your fourth year, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the 3 years you've been with us, you have been our top producer 2 or 3 times.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Which is it, 2 or 3? I can't remember.
2. Okay. The last 2 years.
But you have submitted in excess of $300,000 both those years, correct?
Last year was just under like 298,000 or something. So it was just shy. But in an average of the last 2 years, it was over 300,000.
And again, to keep things in perspective, and today's the 6th of April, 2017. I just did the production bulletin this morning. You are leading organization again at $75,000 submitted business. I'm at $55,000. You're $20,000 ahead of me, and I feel I do okay in this business. So, you know, talk a little bit about how that process came from being frustrated with Banker's Life to being like, oh, my gosh, Jackie Peters can do this. You know, what's it going to look like for me? To where you actually saw the you know, the roller coaster ride is always there. You and I talk about this all the time. But to talk about the elation that you've had with that type of production to lead, I mean, we've got a pretty solid group of people in our organization, and you continue to outproduce everybody, even some of my agents. I've been in the business 29 years. Darren's been in the business 16 or 18 years. Bill Russell's been in the business 16, 18 years. So, you know, talk about that.
Well, Well, I guess in my mind, I still look up to all of you guys, and you guys are, you know, like way in advance and better than I am. But for me, I just feel like I've always said it, I don't give up. You know, I, you know, you guys probably work, well, you work, Jim, one day a week. Bill and Dion, you know, Botch, they probably work a couple days a week, if that. I work sometimes 4 days a week for the most part. You know, I set my calls on Monday and set my appointments. That's my office day, catching up with everything. And then Tuesday through Friday, pretty much every week, I'm in the field. Now, there's some weeks where the calls are good, and I set, you know, 4 or 5 appointments a day. There's some weeks where I set 2 appointments a day. There's some days where I don't have any appointments, but I don't just sit at home and go, okay, I don't have any appointments today. I still have leads. I still have cards. I go out and see these people. And, you know, those days are probably a little more frustrating because you're not guaranteed anyone's going to be home. But if you knock on enough doors, as you've always said, Jim, you know, you're going to make a sale. So it's just, you know, putting, you know, each day, you know, in a role. My goal is to technically have a gym mall day every week. That doesn't always happen, and sometimes it doesn't happen very often at all, but that is my goal for the day, and my goal is to try to sell 5 apps a day. So if you would average that out, 5 apps a day, that would be an awesome week. You're talking, you know, for me, it would be 20 apps a week. Well, I don't always get that. I do average probably from 7 to 12 pretty much every week. There's a few weeks where I have 5, but like I said, I just keep at it and just keep trying. And then at the end of the week, it is what it is.
Well, that's a perfect segue. Talk about one of those times when it's Friday at noon and you have 3 or 4 applications in your bag, and obviously you're probably frustrated with the business, but then you go and you hit that home run and you hit your production goal on maybe one house. Do you have a home run story?
Gosh, you know, I, not off the top of my head, I don't have a home run story. You know, I have hit a couple $10,000 week. But you know, as Jim usually says on the, when we had the calls, that, you know, those are the fun weeks, and, you know, those usually come very easy. And out of all the $10,000 weeks that I've had, I don't think any of them was, you know, a, yep, that was, you know, easy, it, you know, everything just fell into place. You know, not that it was hard, but it still, you know, it goes with that, my mentality for every week is, you have to go out and see the people, and sometimes it works out, and, you know, God works in mysterious ways. You know, he knows when you need things, and just it kind of happens, and so, you know, it's weird how those things just do fall into place. Like, you know, I've got a couple bills that, you know, have to be paid, and all of a sudden I make this sale, and you know, for us, we can make a sale and then not get paid for 4 to 6 weeks from then, you know, even though we made that sale. So you have to keep that ball rolling all the time for me to be able to have that money come in, be able to help me pay for my leads and afford my business, the gas, and pay my bills.
What was your childhood like? Where did you grow up? What did your parents do?
I grew up on a farm, several different farms, actually. My dad, he worked for a Hunter meat packing company, and so he worked outside of the farm. And because of that, when I was in high school, we were doing a dairy farm at that time, and so we had to milk cows. And so my dad would get up and put the cows in the barn, but me, my brother, and my mom would have to get up and milk the cows before I went to school. and I've always grown up, I guess, on a farm, having to help pitch in because I have 7 siblings. And so we always, and me being the second oldest, was always having to bale hay or, you know, disc up a field, you know, whatever. And so we always had to help. So I guess that's probably where I have my mentality of, you know, hardworking, because I've always grown up with that.
So in your mind, who's the most successful person you know? And why? And you may not know them personally, but anybody that you look up to as successful?
Jim Mall. And I'm totally being honest, and you can ask Ken. I have always said I feel like Jim Mall is God, because listening to the CDs that he gave us when I first started, and I was just in awe of how he did things, how he presents himself. When I met him the first time, you know, he didn't know me from Adam, but he was always very nice, very, very helpful. If, you know, I called him a couple times, and he is always there for me. And, you know, there's been a couple times where he is honest, which is good, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything, and pretty much is like, you know, Joyce, you need to do this, you know, it can happen. And, you know, just hearing it from him, it's like, oh my gosh, he's right, you know. And so Jim has always been my idol.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I thought about changing that question, because that's kind of the number one answer we keep getting. And I'm going, all right, so other than Jim Mall, do you have anybody else?
Well, that I really look up to, gosh, I don't know, as a celebrity, I've always idolized Julia Roberts, just because, you know, I think she's a great actress. She's very pretty. My very favorite movie is Pretty Woman, and just how she came from, you know, the ground and the job that she did, but where she ended up, you know, was just, I love that movie. So I guess in reality, you know, I don't know her, but I've always idolized her.
Cool. We used to ask this question, and I think we asked it at our Texas seminar one time, what are you passionate about? And we would go around the room, and everybody would say, you know, I'm passionate about helping people, or I'm passionate about final expenses and stuff. And we said, okay, that's all fine and good. Now let's start over. Once you're done working, once you've hit your goal and you're done for the week, what are you passionate about doing?
Spending time with my grandson, Dawson. He used to not be that way, but he's 13 months old, and I am so passionate about him and just, you know, watching him grow up. He was gone to Germany for 2 weeks a week ago, from the 17th or 18th of March through the 31st, and I told my daughter, I said, I can't go 2 weeks without seeing him, so she FaceTimed me from Germany. But her husband, Brian's mom, lives over in Germany, Stuttgart, Germany, and they were actually supposed to go in November, but Dawson had gotten RSV and the doctor wouldn't let him go, so they rescheduled. And so they went this past couple weeks, and he's just the light of my life. I mean, he's, you know, and you know, as you know, they get older, they're doing things, and he's now, you know, you take your grandma a kiss, and, you know, he'll open his mouth and give you a kiss, and it's just, you know, it's fun just watching him grow. And I said he left a baby, and he's come back a toddler, because he's doing things that, you know, he wasn't doing before. And so I just, you know, when I'm done and whatever time I can spend with him, I do.
That's awesome. You've talked and you've mentioned a lot about goals and different goals that you have on a weekly basis. What does goal setting look like for you, just not only on a weekly basis, but yearly and everything?
Well, I heard Bill Russell at one point in time talk about a superior goal. And I have an ultimate goal. So my regular goal is 4,500 a week. My ultimate goal is 6,500, and my superior goal is 8,000. And I don't always hit those, but in the back of my mind, those are the goals that I want to hit. And my daily goals, I want to hit 4 to 5 apps a day. And so my annual goal is to hit 350,000 this year. So I have some pretty hefty goals, but with this job, I feel like it's not attainable. If, you know, I do what I'm supposed to be doing, those are all attainable goals.
Hey, Joyce, something that we really haven't talked about much on this on our podcast, I don't know why it hasn't come up, but you've been in the business 3 short years, starting your fourth, and you've qualified for a trip, I think, with one or more of the companies almost every year. Talk about, you know, those trips that we go on and how that, you know, came about and what it, how it's motivated you in this business.
Well, the first year that we were with One Life, I qualified for their trip to Lake Tahoe, and you're allowed to take an additional person, and of course I don't have a significant other, so I decided I was going to just take my children, starting with my oldest daughter. So she, Kayla, was the one that got to go with me, and she was blown away. You know, she didn't know what to expect, and because we didn't, there are activities that you can participate in that they provide, and we decided not to do that. We were going to just spend quality time together and just hang out and maybe, you know, do some shopping or something. And because we didn't do the activities, I guess it cost something. Well, we got there, they handed each of us $400, and she was like, my gosh, Mom, they gave me $400, and, you know, I'm not even part of this. And she was just, we were just kind of blown away with how that was. And, I mean, it was a gorgeous place, and it was just fun. We could do whatever we wanted. Last year, I did not qualify for a trip. I was close, but I missed Trinity by a couple thousand dollars, which was disappointing, but it, you know, it happens. And then I qualified again for the One Life trip. For this year, I'm able to go to, we're going to Jamaica June 22nd through the 26th. So really looking forward to that again. And because my middle daughter, who would be the one to go, just went to Germany, she travels quite a bit with her job. And with having the baby, she opted not to. And my son, I offered it to him, but he's getting married, and he has a lot of other things he wants to do. And couldn't take the time away from work, so Kayla gets to go with me again. So she's super excited to spend another trip with Mom, because she got to see what was the last one was like. And that one was cold, you know, beautiful scenery, but a little bit colder where Jamaica's going to be more sun response. So a little bit forward to that one.
This is an awesome resort we're going to, and you should bring your grandson along, because it's got an awesome water park. It's a great place for kids. You're going to love it. It's a great place.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I would, but he's so, you know, kind of little yet and stuff, but, you know, that is an option in the future, because I know I saw on this one that, you know, you can't pay for bringing additional people too, so that is something, you know, I plan on doing in the future.
Do you have a favorite failure? And by that, I just mean one where you can look back and say, whoa, I really messed that up, but I'm really glad I did, because it led to something better later down the road.
Well, you know, I wouldn't, I guess, call this a failure, but as we talked about earlier, me quitting the job with Jim, that was a pretty, you know, bold move for me. You know, 32 years is a very long time. And, you know, as things were turning out, you know, when it didn't work out and I moved back, not knowing what I was going to do, because when I was working at Jim, even though I was in management, you know, the pay wasn't that great. So I always had a second job, whether it be working retail at Kohl's for a couple years, and then I started bartending and waitressing at a local restaurant. And so I found like I went from gym straight to there, and I literally would work from 8 in the morning till probably midnight, 1 o'clock almost every day. So that was a lot. So to be able to do this and make the kind of income that I can make not having to work two jobs or those extremely long hours and long days. So, it you know, I don't know that I would call it a failure, but I probably would have done this had I not done that I quit and moved to California.
So I know earlier when you were saying you work about 4 days a week, my dad and I are looking at each other going, wow, you know, maybe we should try to get her to cut back. But working 4 days a week for you is a vacation. I mean,
yeah,
from what you just described, you know, 4 days a week on your own schedule is way different than what you did before. Do you find it ironic that your two main jobs were Jim's formal wear and then Jim's final expense group?
No, I think it's awesome because, you know, I mean, both Jim's are awesome men. And Jim Davis, who was the gentleman that owned Jim's formal wear, passed away, gosh, probably maybe 10, 15 years ago. So he, you know, wasn't there for a period when I was there, and his son had taken it over. And he was a good guy, but just not like Jim, because when Jim owned it, you know, because I started there right out of high school, and there we had prom season, so we had to work, you know, every day plus weekends, you know, because there's only a certain amount of time that you can get these tuxedos together for the special event, whether it be a prom or a wedding. And we would get done working, say, 10 o'clock, and then Jim Davis would take us to the local bar that was right next to it, right down the street, and, you know, buy beer and pizza just to kind of unwind a little bit after, you know, those stressful days of trying to get that done. And so, you know, there was a lot of stress there, but there was, you know, good times too. And with this job with Jim Mall, it's the same way, only it's different. It's a roller coaster, you know. It's not as stressful as far as hiring-wise, as far as hours, but it's stressful because I am completely on my own. If I don't make a sale, I don't make any money. And that is the roller coaster ride that Jim always talks about.
You might touch on that real quick, because you talk a lot about how you are on your own and you don't have to check in with a manager, and we don't, you know, keep tabs on your everyday activities. But we're also here for you all the time, and you have a whole list of contacts when you're in trouble or you're in the house and you need a little advice. Talk about that real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's kind of funny. I'm just going to quickly touch on this because, you know, you said you guys are there for us if we need help, and you are. And, you know, you don't call us saying, are you working today or how many sales did you make? It, you know, it's really up to me. And when Jim called me the other morning, I sent my production to him. And the last 2 weeks, it's only been in the 3,000s, which is very, very disappointing to me. And I was like, he called like almost immediately after I sent it. I thought, oh, crap. I don't know. $3,000 the last 2 weeks. That's the mentality of always having a boss over me to be held accountable for, which is totally different than what this is, because, you know, Jim doesn't hold, he does, but he doesn't hold us accountable as far as, you know, like, it's really, you know, our business. Now, if we're struggling and we need his help, he's always there for us, as well as you, Tucker, Ken, or, you know, Dion, Botch, Logan, you know, any of them. You guys are always there to help. But, you know, I've spoken with a couple of them, even though, you know, we've met a couple times, but we live in different states. It's different than going to a job where you see that person, you know, it face-to-face every day. So, you know, with this, it is pretty awesome because last week, my production probably last week could have been a little better, but I did take off Friday because I had a lot of stuff going on over the weekend. My son Lance had an engagement party on Saturday. I had to pick Brian and Kim and Dawson up from the airport on Friday night. And then Sunday, we surprised my dad with his 85th birthday party for him. So I had to make some food and do some things. And I needed to get a bunch of stuff done for myself at home. And so I had to do it. And so I can do it and not feel guilty other than myself feeling guilty, like I should be working if I wanted to make more money, but I have to do this stuff too. So it's kind of a balance you have to make a decision on. But it is truly my decision. You know, nobody called me Friday to say, Joyce, are you working? What are you doing? You know, and I got all my stuff done. We surprised my dad, which was awesome. And it was a great weekend. And then, you know, Monday, you're back in the grind. And so this week I'm working every day.
So you've been very successful and you've hit your goal many times. And like you said, those last couple of weeks kind of drive you crazy. But when you do hit your goal and you're jacked, do you still have the elation or is it just kind of expected now?
Well, I do have it, I guess, per se. I feel, you know, you just feel so much better because, you know, you know that you hit your goals and, you know, you helped all these people and you were able to make the money that week. You know, on the $3,000 week, you know, I don't beat myself up, per se, but I beat myself up because I don't like those weeks. And, you know, I talk to Ken all the time, and Ken's like, you know, Joyce, that's a great week. And I'm like, no, it's not. You know, my great week is $8,000 or more, and that's what I want to do every week. And I know that that's not always going to happen, but I just, that's my mentality. That's what I want. And so I strive to get that every week.
So these two views I think are kind of opposing, the contentment versus drive. And I think you've commented plenty on drive, what drives you to get out of the house and go work and go sell. But what on the other side of the coin, what gives you contentment?
When I hit at least $2,000 a day, then I'm content with that day. Because I know with the 4 days, I'm going to get close to that. But when I make one sale and it's only, you know, $400, $600, I'm a little disappointed in myself and try to figure out, you know, what I did wrong or different. But I did it because I still knock on the doors and, you know, try to see the people. But I'm content with, like I said, if I can get four apps or $2,000 a day, that's my contentment.
Now, you're the first lady agent that I've had on the podcast. I interviewed my mom, so she's the only other woman that I've had on here. But do you find that this might be easier for ladies? Do you find that it could be scarier? You might talk about, I don't want to necessarily say that this is a male dominated field, for a reason, but it is. I mean, if you look across, there's way more, male agents than there are female. What do you think about that?
Well, yes, I agree that there are, more males, but, I don't really, I guess for the most part, I'm not really scared or afraid when I do this job because, you know, I don't have to go into any house that I don't feel comfortable. If an area looks really bad, I'll leave it, you know. And I guess I learned that lesson probably in my first year, late in my first year. I was in East St. Louis, which is not a very nice area, and it was a door knock. It was a nice day, and it was a old kind of beat up house that had, was made into apartments. And I walked around the back because this lady's apartment was in the back, and the door was open, but she had one of those chained, you know, those barred doors outside her door, and she had that locked. And she had music going, and, you know, she let me in, and she locked the door with me in it. And I think the lady was psycho, because in talking to her, you know, going through a few questions that we normally go through, her answers were really off the wall. So I just said, okay, I'll, you know, I took no information down from her other than the mental, what we talked about. I didn't write anything down. I didn't fill out an application. And to get out of there, I just told her, okay, I'll send in your application and I'll see if it gets you qualified. I didn't have any information, but she didn't even realize it. And then she's like, well, I don't know where the key is. And so I'm locked inside her house going, oh my gosh. And so she, thank God, found the key. And she goes, well, I'm going to walk you out because this is not a very nice area. I think that was the one and only time I was scared out of my pants, because I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, what's she going to do with me in here? But it was a lady, you know, it was, you know, a guy. You know, and you talking about, you know, ladies, I think sometimes guys think that we have an advantage because, you know, guys will fall for, you know, oh, she's cute, she's pretty, you know, and they'll buy just because of that. And I think, you know, that's probably happened to me a couple times, but those usually end up canceling anyway because they just, you know, do it just while you're there to flirt with you. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a guy, it's a girl, you know. But I don't feel afraid or scared about this at all. So
I don't want to get political here, but there's a, and this has been going on, so it's not just recent news, but the wage gap between men and women has existed forever, yet you're one of our only active producing woman agents, and you are our top producer. So you're outproducing all of our male agents. So you have basically taken this wage gap in your own hands and said, fine, if I want to get paid more, I'm just going to make more. And I realize that that's not realistic for somebody who's on salary or just works their 9 to 5 or whatever. But what kind of freedom has that given you to decide when you work and how much you're going to make?
Well, you know, it's getting a little bit easier just because I'm going into my fourth year. You have a, you know, the renewal, which in the first year you don't have. And I remember the first year, I didn't take off or anything. I worked no matter what, even if it was, you know, a holiday or whatever, I worked. And now, like, next Friday's Good Friday, I probably won't set any appointments. I probably won't work. I'll just enjoy time with Dawson and getting ready for Easter. But my first year, I would have worked no matter what. But I love the fact that, yes, you're right, Tucker, you can, I can make it as much money as I can or I want to if I work as hard as I do, because it's really, for the most part, in my control. You know, you have your chargebacks, you have your cancellation where you got paid and you got to pay it back, and, you know, somebody premium didn't go through. So there's a lot of work that also goes into this to maintain that, because if you just don't follow up on that, then you're just out that money. Because, you know, I had, you know, someone who said, oh, thank you for calling me, I didn't know that, you know, or, you know, a bad account number was given, or, you know, so if you don't follow up on those things, you're just losing out on money you could have been making. And, you know, on the cancellations or the lapse, you know, sometimes you don't get them back. But I always hope they're, you know, like close to a year old, and you don't have to lose any money as far as paying anything back from the commission you were paid. So that's, you know, my perspective of it. You can, you know, you still have to work at those things.
In a lot of houses, we have to ask strange or unusual questions, especially the ones for like Social Security numbers and bank accounts and stuff. How have you perfected this art of asking a question?
You know, I don't think I really do it any different in any house. There's some people who just will not give it up. And then, you know, you just have to tell them, well, you know, I can't help you if you don't give me that information, because when you do pass away, your Social Security number is going to be on your death certificate. That's how they're going to match you up to who you are. So we don't sell your information. We don't use your information for any purposes other than that. And the banking, if they, you know, I totally refuse to give me their banking, I try to go with American Amicable if their health warrants it, because they can send the check in. I had one just the other day that the guys, I was going to lose the whole sale, the whole appointment. Like, I will not give you my banking information. So then I said, okay, you know, and in, you know, I don't think that they really listen to you when you're talking. And I try to slow down because you say, you know, we will automatically withdraw this, set this up to automatically withdraw out of your checking or savings account. And, you know, I say it a couple times in my presentation. And then when the guy, you know, we're talking about it, he's like, oh, no, I don't get my information. And I was like, well, had we not talked about that before, you know, I could see, you know, you never threw up any red flag that you didn't want to do that. But then when we were, you know, getting ready to fill out the application, he threw a fit. Then I switched him over to American Amicable, got the sale per se. I helped him because in my mind, that's what it's truly all about. You know, like the people that only have, I had one yesterday, the lady couldn't afford much. So rather than losing the sale, she took a $10,000 for $23 or something. You know, that's not much, but I was at least able to help her with that. And, you know, I had a lady about a month ago who called me up and had that in my first year and just added an additional $5,000. So now she has $10,000. So I gained there because I didn't turn away that little sale in the beginning. So
perfect. What if you could go back and talk to your, say, 30-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice when you were 30 years old, what would you tell yourself and place us? Where were you? What were you doing at 30?
At 30, I was a mom of three, working at Jim Formalwear. I was a wife at that time, yes, and just managing a family. If I could go back, tell myself something, I would say go to college, get a degree. I would still have my family because I love my family. But I would, you know, because right out of high school, I started a job and got married because that's what was happening back then. So the biggest thing I think I would tell myself is to go to college and get a degree of some sort and get into a field rather than just taking a job.
What would that field be? What would the degree be?
Gosh, I don't know. Past, I guess. I don't know that one yet.
Do you feel, and I don't know, this is all speculation, but because you're awesome at this business. Had you had a college degree, would you have even considered what most people, I mean, even my dad, Jim, never wanted to be an insurance salesman because he had that in his mind too, that you got to go to college and get a degree. I mean, he made me go to college and get a degree, even though I knew I wanted to sell insurance. But do you think that had you gone to college and got a degree, would you even consider this line of work?
Well, you know, it, now that you say that, listening to you, it probably would be in sales, just because I am a very outgoing person. I love to talk to people. And when I was working with Jim, because of I was a production coordinator, which was in the production side almost the whole time. and they had a Jim's got into fire restoration, which means if someone has a fire in their house, Jim's would come in and pack up their garments, clothing, textile, towels, curtains, anything like that, purses, shoes, belts, and restore them to before the fire, because that's how the insurance company started to go. And they had a sales position open for that, and I applied for it, and they hired someone outside the company because they said, I'm not a salesman. And so that person quit, and so then it came up again. I applied for it again. They didn't give it to me again. And so then that person quit, and then the third time it came open, I'm like, I'm not doing this again. You know, I'm not putting myself through this a third time. You know, they didn't give it to me twice. Why would they give it to me a third time? And our HR guy came and told me to apply for it. And I'm like, no, because I didn't get it twice. Why would I do this to me again? So I had to literally type up a letter stating why I would be a good salesperson for this position. And in my mind, a salesperson is a person who can talk to people, know the product you're selling, and be able to sell. That's the salesperson. They don't have any special magic tricks that they do. It's just knowing your product and being able to talk to people. And then I finally got the position as a salesperson, and I outsold the people that they had before me. I got more clients in than the people before me. And then I went back to production because they asked me to, they gave me more money to come back on the production side because I did such an awesome job with that. But I had done that for years. And so I said, you know, I didn't have to be on the road then. So I took the job that wouldn't give me any more money for before I took the sales position. They gave me more money to come back. So I took that. But I guess I really love the sales part of it. So I probably would be in sales.
That's awesome. Got a few quick draw questions here. Your answers don't have to be quick, but hopefully the questions are a little bit quicker. What is one experience that you believe everybody should try at least once?
Oh, gosh. Doing what the person feels is passionate about. Even if you think that you can't do it, you should still do it.
Are there any books that you've read multiple times, or is there a book you find gifting to other people or telling people, hey, you got to read this, such and such?
Yeah, I guess the book that I feel I enjoy the most and I go back to often is The Secret to Closing the Sale by Zig Ziglar.
Can you say that title one more time?
Secret to Closing the Sale by Zig Ziglar.
Okay. Do you have any specific morning rituals, anything you do before you head out the door in the morning?
Yes. I hit my snooze a couple times before I get out of bed. I take a shower. Most of the time, make a pot of coffee. Say my prayers and pray for the day over my family and my job and safety, and usually eat a little breakfast and get out the door.
What time do you, let's do it this way. What time is your alarm clock set for?
Well, that varies because it depends on, like, this morning I had to leave by 7:30 because I got a 2.5-hour drive to get to my first appointment. Through the winter months, because of the weather, I had been working more local, so it takes me less than an hour to get there. And if your first appointment is at 9 or 10, you know. But I usually set my alarm somewhere between 6 and 7.
Okay. And what about evening before bed? Do you have any specific rituals or things that you do before you turn the light out at night?
Yes. When I get home from out being out on the road, I go through my app, check my emails for the most part. If I have to pay any bills, then I usually sit and watch a little TV, and then I go to bed and read my Bible and turn off the light.
Do you have a TV in your bedroom?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any quotes, sayings, or mantras that you look at or are a constant reminder?
No, not really.
What are one to two things that people can do or change in the next week or two that would have a drastic impact in their lives?
In the next week or two?
It could be a month or just...
Well, I guess health-wise, you know, change, you know, any habits that are not good, which is, you know, hard to do. And I guess for me, it's trying to get more exercise into my life because I used to walk almost every day, and it's harder now because I usually don't get home till after dark, and then I still have to work on my apps and stuff. So, but those are two things that I feel are really important.
Do you have any podcasts or books or resources, websites, anything that you check on a daily basis or a weekly basis that you kind of keep up on?
I get emails from Guy Finley, Stewardship. I kind of, you know, read those. And I just recently started being very interested in Jack Canfield, and he's actually doing a webinar on Saturday that I signed up for that I'm at noon, because most of the time a lot of those are through the week and I'm usually working, so I can't, you know, attend them. But with this one being on a Saturday, I was pretty excited that I might be able to listen to that.
Where can people find you? Are you active on social media, Facebook, or anything?
Yes.
Which one? Facebook, Twitter?
Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Facebook.
Okay.
I have LinkedIn, but I don't work with that a whole lot anymore because that's more like work-related, and I don't really have the time with that I should. But Facebook, yes, I'm on. Pretty much, I check it every day at some point in time.
I have one more question, but before we get to that, do you have anything else that you want to add? Anything you want to push our listeners to check out or do?
Check out your insurance solution. I mean, this is a great organization, a great place. I am so thankful that I was able to get connected with guys and just love it.
Awesome. So in closing, what would you like your personal legacy to be?
Personal legacy? Gosh, I don't know. You know, my most important thing for me is my kids and my grandson. So whatever I do, I always do for them, per se. You know, so, you know, I want them to be able to say that I was a great mom, I did whatever I could, and I guess I kind of go back to when I forced my husband. All of our friends had said back then that, you know, my kids were going to grow up horrible, they were going to be bad kids because of me wanting a divorce, and, you know, my kids aren't. They're great kids. They all have, you know, great jobs, and they're all out on their own. Own their own homes and, you know, looking forward to more grandbabies in the future. But right now, kids is the only one that has daughters. So I just want my kids to be proud of me.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thanks for being on here with us, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce. Have a great day. Be safe.
Thanks, Jim. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Stop by oneanddonetraining.com. That's the number one, A-N-D-D-O-N-E, training.com. There you'll find our blog, media library, and ongoing training to help with your final expense career. Thanks. We'll see you there.